KALW.
This is the time when we need the most support around our financial situation.
San Francisco's treasurer talks about a population that's being forgotten in the pandemic.
There's still just under 5% of folks that have no checking account or savings account.
When shops go cashless, what does that mean for the unbanked? Then we hear how Faithon Brown is making sure BART is safe for employees and riders during the pandemic.
Safety is always number one. Yeah, of course, for COVID, has elevated to its highest level.
A new installment of our series on essential workers, and we'll follow up with Uncuffed producer Chanton Bunn, who's been out of San Quentin for over a month now.
You know, when people go to war and come back, and like, you know, I left some friends behind.
Survivor's guilt.
I have a lot of that.
Voices from around the Bay. Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. Many shops and restaurants have stopped accepting cash as a way to protect their employees from the coronavirus. But when cash is no longer accepted, many people get left behind, the unbanked and the underbanked, people who have no or little access to bank accounts. In 2005, San Francisco launched a program called Bank on San Francisco to help more low-income people open accounts. And just last year, the city passed a cashless ban on businesses operating in the city, one of the first cities in the nation to do so. Then came the pandemic. I talked to Jose Cisneros, the treasurer of San Francisco, about how the city's doing in terms of its unbanked communities today.
There's a study that's done by the FDIC every few years, and their last results from 2017 show that still in the San Francisco Bay Area, there's still just under 5% of folks that have no checking account or savings account, totally unbanked. There's like 13.5% that are underbanked, which means that they report that even though they may have a bank account, they're still using a check casher at times or a payday lender. We still see that there's issues out there, and there are people that still, even here in San Francisco, may not have a bank account. And I think that's why our supervisors passed this ordinance that said, where at all possible, it's still important for us to give access to all, you know, kind of products and services in as many ways as possible, including even being able to pay by cash.
Mm-hmm. And if we can talk about who is unbanked and who is underbanked.
When we look at who's unbanked and underbanked, of course, you know, no surprise, we see that it's a lot of low-income people. Unfortunately, there are legacy low-income folks or vulnerable folks in our population. I'm sure every time we look at it, we see all sorts of racial inequity. We see the legacy of areas that are underserved by banks, bank branch deserts, even that occur at times. Holdovers from the old redlining days and all sorts of things like that.
Hmm. What about these restaurants, though, that have, you know, have remained open for takeout and delivery and said they no longer accept cash? Some folks have even made it a selling point. And for them, they say it's really an issue of health. We are a cashless shop, or we are a cashless restaurant.
I think we have to look at how that might work. I completely understand that at times, particularly during this completely unprecedented pandemic, people are worried about health and safety first and foremost. But certainly first and foremost, everybody should be following the laws. If they feel that's difficult for their business, I think they should contact our policymakers, which is our mayor and our board of supervisors here in San Francisco. They should work with them to say this law needs to be changed or this law needs to be temporarily suspended. But short of that, I think they should follow the laws. Now, I mean, I do say this is certainly a real-time struggle that many of us are having in our community, but and the reality is many things are going cashless, right? And that might seem like it in some ways it's exclusionary to low-income people or to some low-income people or to people who don't have a bank account. But at the same time, I would say we've also seen where low-income people can benefit by some of these new practices that are coming along. For example, a low-income person might find that they've had ready access to some earnings that they otherwise couldn't have if they could quickly and easily become an Uber driver or a Lyft driver. If we said that every Uber and Lyft driver had to have a cash box, a mobile cash register, be able to do business in cash, that might slow down many low-income people who wouldn't be able to pull that together and get that going and or feel safe carrying cash around in their car or taxi drivers in their taxis, as they were often, as we know, targets of theft. And so in many ways, some of these advances, even, you know, non-cash services, are actually opening up opportunities. So I think there's some pros and cons, however you look at it.
Again, this cashless ban in San Francisco was made before a pandemic happened, and it does not, from the numbers, it does not look like it's going away anytime soon. Do you see this changing in any way?
This is the time when we need the most support, and particularly the most support around our financial situation. I really do believe that people are best supported by having some sort of a bank account that's appropriate for them, somewhere where they can keep their money safe. If they are getting paid, they can get paid through direct deposit, which means that the minute that their employer puts that money in their accounts, it's available for them to spend on their debit card or by pulling it out of an ATM. Fast access to our funds, safe access to our funds, keeping our money safe. When the government sent out the emergency relief payments to everybody in the country whose earnings were below a certain level, millions and millions and millions of people, the people who got that money the fastest are the people who had a bank account and had shared that bank account with the government, probably when they had filed their taxes. And that meant that they got hundreds of dollars weeks sooner when they needed it. I think that having all the best tools and set up for every single person in our city is critical to helping them be successful, particularly during challenging times like these. I would like to see everybody find a way to get connected to a safe, appropriate account for them and find a way to keep their money safe and have access to their funds as quickly and as easily as possible.
That's San Francisco Treasurer Jose Cisneros. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Before COVID-19 hit, over 400,000 Bay Area residents used BART every weekday. Now most trains are largely empty and very clean. As the pandemic drags on, the transportation system is adjusting to the new reality. As part of our ongoing series, The Essentials, we're bringing you overlooked stories of essential workers, people working outside their homes while the rest of us are sheltered in place. And today, we're sharing the story of Faithon Brown. He's an essential worker at BART, who oversees day-by-day operations in some of the East Bay stations. KALW's B. Saul has the story.
We had a massive drop, probably 95% drop, when COVID first hit and the shelter in place was mandated by Governor Newsom.
That's Faithon Brown. He works for BART.
Only essential employees were riding BART at that moment. So any essential business, whether it was law enforcement, fire department, state workers, that's pretty much who were transporting it. And those who supported, you know, frontline essential workers.
Faithen started out as a station agent with the Bay Area Transit System, aka BART, in 2001 and has moved through the ranks. Currently, he's the transportation supervisor and oversees roughly 150 workers who manage day-to-day operations at stations. The pandemic has changed a lot of things, but Faithen says some priorities are just as important as before the coronavirus pandemic hit.
Safety is always number one. Of course, for COVID, has elevated to its highest level. Safety for our employees, safety for our patrons, working with other departments to make sure that all of the federal and state agenda is being followed to a T.
He's especially looking out for BART employees on the front line.
Making sure that they have all the materials that they need.
And it's a long list of supplies.
Everything from disinfectant wipes to disinfectant sprays, masks, gloves.
A lot of the new cleaning regimen falls on BART's maintenance team. The maintenance professionals work for what Faithen calls the RSNS department, or the Rolling Stock and Shop.
They do a top to bottom. Each car gets cleaned each day from a very extensive safety cleaning of the floors, the seats, the hand straps, the poles, all touch points within the station, transfer machines, anything that you can come in contact with is cleaned on a daily basis by all shifts.
I wonder how it's going so far.
From the feedback from the public, they have been posting on Twitter or what have you that the trains are spotless, you know, when they get on. And we purposely left our trains long, even though our ridership tanked, so that we can comply with social distancing.
Part of Faithen's job is also keeping riders informed of changes and new rules and procedures.
The signage is in all our stations, it's online, it's on the app. Social distancing, wearing your mask, making sure your hand sanitizer. We've installed hand sanitizer stations throughout every part of BART, every station.
I asked him about his family and how they've been affected by COVID.
Like pretty much everyone else who was stuck at home, I would say anxiety just across the board, you know, for anyone having to deal with COVID. You know, I think once we got a couple of weeks in, they relaxed a little bit more. My two youngest daughters had to, of course, finish school online, one in college and one in high school. And so that took some adjustment.
BART is also in a period of adjustment. They have put out a 15-step plan to welcome riders back, which includes contactless payment and encouraging Bay Area employers to stagger their workers' shifts in order to avoid crowding at peak travel times. And in the past month, ridership is creeping up.
So we have seen an increase of more people as the counties relax some of the restrictions, but we're nowhere near. It'll be quite some time.
And that may be a problem. Currently, according to BART General Manager Robert Powers, the system is losing more than $40 million per month. And as of mid-July, the transit agency is seeking more than $30 billion from the federal government to cover COVID-related costs through 2021. For more information on BART safety and pandemic prevention techniques, you can visit bartable.bart.gov. In Oakland, I'm Bea Saul for Cross Currents.
Bea is a reporter in our summer journalism training program. You can find out more about that and other training opportunities at kelw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. San Quentin has had the deadliest coronavirus outbreak of any California prison. It started after incarcerated people were transferred there from Chino, another prison where the disease had spread. Uncuffed producer Chanton Bunn made it out just in time. After more than two decades of incarceration, he was released from San Quentin at the beginning of July. When he left, he was suffering from COVID, and he's been recovering on his own. KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs followed up with Bunn to hear how he's adjusting to the outside world.
We're sitting outside where the place where you're living, and it's a really nice day. So how are you doing?
I'm doing a whole lot better. I'm just enjoying every moment of freedom right now. I'm enjoying the sun. I'm enjoying the wind. I'm enjoying waking up in the morning and walking outside with a little chill. I remember about last week, my lungs started to clear up. And when it cleared up right away, I took my first deep breath and I was like, oh my God, breathing like this is so much easier. And it was like a new life for me. I'm like, I am breathing. I love breathing.
That's awesome. But it took you a while. It took you a while to feel better, right?
Yeah. After my temperature went down, I had coughing still. I had trouble breathing still. Then I got this thing they call COVID toe.
What's that like?
It's torture. It's like somebody pulling your toenails out and picking what toe they want to pull it from.
Ow.
Yeah. Torture.
Could you walk?
Yeah. The first time I venture out, I was like, oh, I'm going to go right now, but I'm going around the block. At first, I wanted to test my lungs out to see how much I could walk before I got tired and I couldn't breathe too well. But also, I was like, I wanted to see the outside world, and it was scary. I didn't feel comfortable crossing the street. The cars were so fast. I stopped for every car, and every car stopped for me, and we had to have eye contact, and they keep on telling me go. And the smell, there was a gas station right here. I smelled the gas, and then I smelled, you know, the little food that they had there. I smelled the exhaust pipe. It was amazing, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, getting all my senses back. Like, I see people walking towards me. The only thing weird is when people walk towards, they don't have eye contact. They look the other way and like, act like they don't know you. And I was like, I'm not used to that. I'm waving at everybody. Hi, how you guys doing? Hi, how you guys doing?
Because you used to be in a place where you know everyone.
Yeah, and then they just look at me like, okay. Look, there go my buddy, Blondie. That's my cat friend.
Who's your cat friend?
Blonde.
Can you describe him?
It's a like a tiger striped cat. When I was stuck in the room on COVID, I used to sit by the window, and then used to come by. Then I made friends with them. There's two of them. There's blonde and black. They were my only company for 3-4 weeks. So yeah, those are my buddies right there. They come by 3-4 times a day. I stopped having severe symptoms. Where I could focus on taking things in, processing everything. And the walk around the block is helping me process, like, because, you know, sitting in this room is like sitting in a cell. I just have a view. Now that I'm coming out a little bit and walking around and seeing things, and this week and a half, I yell out, I'm free.
You
I come out
yell.
Here, I yell, I'm free. This is freedom. I'm free. And I roll around the grass. I'm free. And I tell myself that it's still overwhelming, but the feelings are kicking in, the joyness and the sorrow at the same time. You know, I feel so bad for my friends that I left behind. I feel like, you know, when people go to war and come back and, like, you know, I left some friends behind.
Survivor's guilt.
I have a lot of that because I have a lot of friends there. And two have died. And, you know, it's hard to process that because my friend had passed away. I can't go to his funeral because I don't know where the family's at. CDC's not telling us anything. The sad part is, for me, that is so... That I have this guilt is because when I was in there and it was an outbreak, we talked about it with both of them. The first one, I know him as Spanky. I told him, be careful, because if you catch it, I don't think you're going to make it, because I know his medical problems. And, I you know, I check up on him. And Eric, that just passed away, we talked about it when it was an outbreak, right when he heard that Chino sent inmates to San Quentin, he double masked everywhere he went.
He was worried.
And I knew his condition, he had respiratory problems. And, you know, it's hard to process that because I can't be a part of the funeral. I don't know where he's getting buried. I don't know how his family's doing. And, you know, I'm starting to process that. Now I'm starting to think I got to live for these two guys that I care about, you know, because they always told me, man, you're going to be out there. You're going to be good. You know, I was real close with him. One of them, I was his cellmate for years.
I'm really sorry to hear that, Mom. Yeah. I'm really sorry.
So right now, I'm just in the process of mourning him.
I remember the last time we talked, you told me that you weren't quite sure you were going to get out, and then all of a sudden you had to run around and say goodbye, and it was kind of weird to all your friends. Are these two people you got to say goodbye to when you left?
I didn't get to say goodbye to them because they lived on the bottom tier, and I was heading down the bottom tier, and the officer's like, you better go right now. And I hope they heard me because I yelled out, I'll see you guys later, man. I'm gone.
And you were experiencing symptoms yourself, like bad symptoms. Obviously, you know, we don't know the extent of what they were feeling, but I can imagine that must
have. I could imagine how they passed. And that's a sad thing because I experienced it and it almost took my life. I would have passed on if I didn't have my community caring for me and taking good care of me and you know, helping me through this. And I know that with them, they don't have that. They're going to the hospital by themselves. There's no community care. There's no, you know, and so that's another guilt I feel because I got care from people that care about me, that love me. And then when I think about them, they had a steel door and handcuffs on them.
That was Uncuffed producer Chanton Bun speaking with KELW's Nina Gensler-Debs. You can stay tuned for more of Bun's story by subscribing to Uncuffed in your podcast player. Just look up Uncuffed. And before we go, here's some new music from a local artist. This is Monophonics, and their new album is called It's Only Us. It came out earlier this year. Today's Cross Currents team includes Precious Green, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Victor Tenz, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.